From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, filling in on this cloudy afternoon for Tony Perkins. The Democrat-controlled House of Representatives is likely to impeach President Trump tomorrow. Now, in just a minute, I'll talk with Republican Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee and is fresh off his appearance last night on Tucker Carlson's Fox News show. In my second segment, after the Hallmark Channel featured an ad featuring two lesbian brides kissing on their wedding day, 1 million moms put pressure on the channel to pull the ad. Now, while Hallmark initially pulled the offending ad, they subsequently reversed course and put it back on the air, prompting a call for Christians to boycott. I'll talk with Monica Cole, executive director of 1millionmoms.com, a division of the American Family Association. At the bottom of the hour, a Montana high school revoked the official student club status for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Club because of its religious beliefs. This, despite having existed as an official student club for 5 years. I'll talk with Jonathan Larkham, Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel. And at 42 past the hour, the popular streaming service Netflix is facing incredible pushback, and rightly so, following the release of a new film that contains profane anti-Christian content produced by Brazilian YouTube comedy troupe known for producing irreverent content. It's titled The First Temptation of Christ. Among other things, it depicts God and Mary as illicit lovers and Jesus as a closeted homosexual. I'll talk with David Clausen, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. Go to our podcast website, TonyPerkins.com, for more information on today's guests and stories. And follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. A final reminder before our first segment, as we approach the end of the year, the battle for America's future is far from over. Partner with FRC so that we can continue to make a difference together in 2020. And when you give before December 31st, your gift will be doubled thanks to a generous year-end challenge match. Help us advance faith, family, and freedom for the sake of America. And to donate, call 1-800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or visit our podcast site, TonyPerkins.com. House Judiciary Committee member Louie Gohmert, Republican from Texas, claimed that Democrats are being hypocritical by impeaching President Trump for alleged obstruction of Congress while ignoring the Democratic presidential frontrunner statement that he won't appear at any Senate impeachment trial. Louie Gohmert called Thursday's proceedings the latest outrage in the insane impeachment saga in an interview with Brian Kilmeade on Tucker Carlson Tonight. And joining me now with his analysis is the Republican congressman from Texas's first congressional district himself, Louie Gohmert. Congressman Gohmert, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to be on Washington Watch. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you for all you do, standing firm for truth and calling what is a duplicitous event in the House of Representatives precisely that. The Democratic-controlled House Judiciary Committee has approved two articles of impeachment against the president with a 23-17 party line vote last Friday morning. And it adjourned unexpectedly late Thursday morning, which rightly enraged Republicans. The two articles of impeachment were abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. But here's what I really love. Here's a soundbite from Friday morning where Democratic chairman of the judiciary, Jerry Nadler, explains the first article of impeachment and takes a vote. And listen, audience members, as my guest here, Republican Congressman Gohmert, clarifies that he is a no vote. Let's listen.
The Judiciary Committee will come to order, a quorum being present. Having agreed yesterday to the amendment in the nature of a substitute on articles of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump, the pending business is reporting the resolution favorably to the House. Reporting quorum being present, the question is now on the motion to report the resolution, H. Res. 755 is amended favorably to the House. Because the resolution contains two distinct propositions, we will divide the question between the two articles. The question now is on Article 1 of the resolution, impeaching President Donald J. Trump for abusing his powers.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask how I'm recorded?
How is the gentleman recorded?
Mr. Gohmert, you are recorded as no.
Yeah, I want to make sure.
The clerk will report.
Mr. Chairman, there are 23 ayes and 17 noes.
The article is agreed to.
I have to tell you, Congressman, you gave all of us Trump supporters a chuckle across America on your clarification, but it seems as if, based on the duplicity of the House Judiciary Committee Democrats, we need that kind of clarification. And I would imagine, as a former judge, you recognize dishonesty when you see it, don't you?
It is so incredible. And I'm telling you, it is really a sad, sad time for this country, you know, that we are to this point, that one party, knowing that their party sought and got influence from foreign countries to affect our election. There's no question about that. They absolutely did. They started with hiring a former MI6 agent in England, and then he got people from Russia, Ukraine, Italy, Australia, others in England. I mean, it's incredible. And then they want to blame Trump, for whom there's no evidence saying that he did that. I mean, even with $35 million or so, Mueller couldn't find any conspiracy collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. So, but they keep bringing that up when they know all of the evidence supports that the DNC and Hillary Clinton campaign did that, but none that Trump did. So it's just a sad time. And I tell you, though, the comment by Schumer back in the 90s after the Clinton impeachment or during it, that the bar is being lowered for that, he said, for that impeachment. And he was concerned that it would cause impeachment to be used as a political weapon. Well, son of a gun, that's what's happened. And that's what he foresaw it, and now he's overseeing it.
Well, and at least two of the representatives in the House of Representatives have stated, two of them, Representative Green, Representative Tlaib, have both outright mentioned their desire to impeach the president before this entire fiasco took place on national television. So it has to appear hypocritical to the average viewer, even those who are not following every single minute of impeachment testimony. And you know as well as I that the ratings are in the toilet for the impeachment hearings, because quite frankly, America does not care. And Trump's economy is booming. His policies have been successful. So here's Biden saying, oh, naturally, I won't testify when it comes time in the Senate. And he's called this a Trump gambit. What's your response to calling his refusal to testify a Trump gambit?
Well, he has the forces of still some people in the intelligence community, in the Department of Justice, FBI. He's still got some people helping him, and he has the Democratic Party, at least most all of it. Not there will be some votes the other way, but they're out to convict Trump of no crime, but overlook the potential crimes that have been committed on their side. So it's pretty outrageous for Biden to act holier than thou when he's on videotape, basically admitting nearly every element of the offense with which they were originally charging Trump. And apparently, Nadler was not content to dropping all the criminal allegations in the actual two charges, the abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. In his long report, he brings crimes back up. Well, that's not what they voted on. So that's rather disingenuous as well to keep bringing that up. So it's just a very, very sad time for America that justice has been brought this low. We finally did get some reaction from the FISA court. I've been saying for years now the FISA court should have been putting lawyers in jail for the fraud upon the court that we knew had been committed. The judge had to know had been committed, but it's taken this long to get anything out of the FISA court. I'm telling you, unless there is some great reawakening, we're in big trouble when justice becomes this much injustice.
Congressman, are you surprised by the fact that Trump's polling numbers are actually going up, particularly in these battleground states? Or is this something that you anticipated would happen because we all understand that the gambit is really on the part of the Democrats?
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect with the polls. I really didn't. Some of us have sat there at the FRC and talked about it. When you have over 90% of the stories from the lamestream media being negative about Trump, it's hard to know what to expect. But apparently the American people, at least half of them, are seeing through all of this ridiculous hypocrisy. So that is one thing that is encouraging to me. But we're in a spiritual war here, in a spiritual war, you have a lot of injustice and you have a lot of untruth.
Yes.
And you have people that start flailing away and they don't care what the truth is. So I'm very gratified that at least half of the American public are beginning to see this isn't justified. This isn't right. Let me tell you, though, if the economy were doing well, but we had a president that was guilty of all the things that we found out that Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC and some of the people at Justice were engaged in trying to stop Trump from being elected and then trying to get him out of office, even if the economy were good, if the tables were turned and we had done that to the Democrats, I could not sit quietly. I would not sit quietly. That is wrong, and it would need to be stopped. I don't care if it was my own party or not.
So you've got to be encouraged by the fact that conservative groups are now talking about targeting the Dirty 30, those 30 districts which elected Trump in 2016 but later elected Democrats in 2018. I would imagine that's encouraging to you who sees this from a 30,000-foot perspective, isn't it?
That is encouraging. Just keep praying for America.
Thank you very much to Representative Louie Gohmert from the 1st Congressional District of Texas for all his good work on the House Judiciary Committee. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, after the Hallmark Channel featured an ad with two lesbian brides kissing, 1 million moms put pressure on the channel to pull the ad, which they did, but only for so long. I'll talk with Monica Cole, executive director of 1 Million Moms, coming up next on Washington Watch.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website where you can make a donation to our year-end matching campaign so that we can advance our shared beliefs in the culture. The Hallmark Channel, which bills itself, as I'm sure you all know, perhaps some of you have even watched Hallmark Channel movies, the country's leading destination for quality family entertainment, end quote, apologized Sunday for removing an ad from Zola.com that features two lesbian brides kissing, but has reinstated it after backlash from homosexual rights advocates. Joining me now with her analysis is Monica Cole, director of 1MillionMoms.com, a division of the American Family Association. Monica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
The Hallmark Channel, I think of this channel, I think of G-rated content, and I certainly don't think if I'm going to watch a Christmas movie with my kids that I will have to explain the notion of sexual morality and have a conversation about why two women are kissing during the commercial break. So when you heard that Hallmark had accepted an ad from Zola, which featured two lesbians kissing, I bet you were a little surprised.
We were, Sarah. We were shocked. We wanted to let our supporters know first and foremost so that they wouldn't be blindsided, and then they would be prepared to also avoid the channel until we could get this resolved. And we contacted Hallmark immediately, started a petition asking that they pull this particular Zola ad. And as you already know, we had talked with the CEO from Hallmark, and Bill Abbott had said that we were surprised to hear this, that we're the ones that informed them, and it was aired in error. So they pulled the commercial for a short time. And so we did find out that over the weekend that they had reversed that decision after the backlash from the gay community. And again, we alerted our supporters at 1 Million Moms of this new development that they're going to continue to air the Zola commercial along with others like it.
Well, it's a little disconcerting when you realize that what was originally victory suddenly became a defeat, and Hallmark backtracked on their original choice, which to us, I think, because there was such Hollywood, such entertainment pushback, and this is a very large segment of the populace, when you have individuals, for example, like Ellen DeGeneres, who uses her sizable Twitter platform to be able to eviscerate the Hallmark Channel, it's got to feel discouraging when you realize you are up against what appears to be the weight of public sentiment. But 1 million moms has pushed on, and you all are running a petition, aren't you?
We are. We have started a boycott pledge that as long as Hallmark Channel continues to air commercials with same-sex relationships and the potential or possibility of movies with same-sex couples, that our families are going to turn the channel. Anyone who signs the boycott pledge is stating that they're not going to watch Hallmark as long as they continue to push the LGBT agenda, and we're just going to change the channel and boycott Hallmark unless they retreat, because we know that our children are worth it, obviously, and that we want any type of controversial topics or discussions about sexual content should be brought up by the parents, not an entertainment industry or network that was supposed to be wholesome. And so, as you mentioned, there are some big names that are praising Hallmark. We do know Kathy Lee Gifford, and there's others that were grateful for our stand and stand up for what was right and for our faith. And so that's what we'll continue to do, because it's up to the parents to teach the children, our children, what we believe based on our faith and beliefs.
What kind of support has your pledge gotten so far online?
Well, currently we have the petition that started last week asking Zola ad to be removed from the Hallmark Channel had over 33,000 signatures, and we just started the boycott pledge, which is a new petition that began just a little over 24 hours ago, and it already has over 30,000, 31,000, 32,000. It's, you know, it's growing every hour. And so we already have a tremendous amount of support, knowing that many of the Hallmark viewers are conservative families, and they're upset with Hallmark, and they feel they've been betrayed. And so there's already a tremendous support for this boycott.
So, Monica, if our listeners want to add their name to this pledge, where do they go?
They can go to 1millionmoms.com and sign the boycott pledge, stating that they're going to boycott Hallmark until they reverse this decision once again and retreat. And it's very simple. It's spelled out 1-O-N-E, million moms with an S, .com. And it only takes less than 30 seconds to sign the pledge. And we hope the listeners do this, because we know there's strength in numbers.
Are you concerned, and I think I speak for many of us here, that this could be the beginning of a trend? If Hallmark is willing to cave to what I like to call the rainbow mob, and something as short-lived as a commercial that airs during a Christmas movie, what's to prevent them from featuring homosexual characters or left-wing politics within what were originally family-friendly movies in the future?
When they open the floodgates and allow these commercials to be aired, of course, families know that now family movie night, family movie time is now ruined, as far as now there's a propaganda and political correctness being exposed to our children. So now we know that they're discussing the possibility of movies. And so we just got to keep fighting the good fight.
Monica Cole, you have been fighting the good fight. She is director of 1millionmoms.com. Go to that website to sign the pledge and join with that organization in defense of traditional values and family-friendly entertainment. This is Washington Watch. Coming up next, they are at it again. Another high school has revoked the official student club status for Fellowship of Christian Athletes because of its religious beliefs, of course, despite having been an official club for 5 years. I'll talk with Jonathan Larkham, Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel, coming up next.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
We're back on Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, yet another high school has pulled the rug out from under a Christian student organization because of what else? Its religious beliefs. Alliance Defending Freedom sent a letter last week to officials with Bozeman, Montana's public school district and Bozeman High School after they revoked the FCA status as a school-sponsored club. Now, the letter explains that the derecognition of Bozeman High School's huddle of FCA after over 5 years as an official school-sponsored group violates the First Amendment and the Federal Equal Access Act. Joining me now with his analysis is Jonathan Larcom, Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel. Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a privilege to be here.
On November 21st, Bozeman, Montana's high school revoked the FCA status as a school-sponsored club. Now, they are allowed to continue as a club, but practically speaking, talk to me about what this impact was of the revocation as an official club.
Well, the revocation of their status as an official club meant that they can no longer do the same thing that other clubs do, namely announce their meetings over the loudspeaker, over the PA. And they also, anytime that they put up flyers, they have to have a little warning sticker essentially on it that notifies everyone that essentially they're not a school-sponsored club, and that's something that the other clubs don't have to do. So the ramifications are that they're singled out, and this is treatment that's not given to any of the other clubs, such as the Environmental Club, the Gender Alliance, Sexuality and Gender Alliance Club, even the Sticker Club. None of them are treated this way.
So we talked last week about the fact that there was a case up in Wappinger Falls, New York, where they also denied the right of a 14-year-old student, Daniela Barca, to organize a student-led club. So that was a stop from the first step. But if it's possible, this high school violation of the Equal Access Act is even stranger because FCA had existed as an official club for 5 years. So how in the world did the school officials justify a revocation?
No, you're absolutely right, Sarah. They had existed for 5 years, and the school administrators, the school district even acknowledges the fact that there was never any sort of a problem. There was never any complaint about FCA excluding any students for any reason. And so all this came about because there were four students, four girls that went and complained to the school board and said that because they had gone and read FCA's statement of faith and that they know what the FCA stands for and that they have a sexual purity pledge that's required of the leaders, not the students, but of the leaders, they said that this shows that FCA is not inclusive and it violates essentially the district policy on inclusion and equity and things like that. And they're just simply mistaken. Unfortunately, the district just doesn't understand the fact that this question has been settled. Their claim or their complaint is that, well, if we allow school sponsorship for a Christian club, that means that we are some way promoting religion or that we are violating the Establishment Clause. And that's simply an argument that was shot down 30 years ago in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court looked at the Equal Access Act and looked at this specific exact scenario and said, no, not at all. Just because you allow a Christian club to exist and to have the same benefits as other clubs, as other non-curricular clubs, that in no way makes it an establishment of religion. You're just treating them the same as everyone else. And so the district in Bozeman is just simply mistaken.
So explain this to me, Jonathan. If you are a fly on the wall with the school administrators and you're about ready to revoke the official students' club status, and you understand that this is 30-year-old settled Supreme Court precedent, what are you thinking in your mind? This is now the second one in less than as many weeks. Why are we seeing this outcropping of cases that are so identical in nature? Are we going to see more of them in your estimation?
Well, I certainly hope not. I think maybe what the school districts are relying on is the fact that Christians won't stand up for their rights and they won't speak out and essentially ask the schools to preserve their rights under the Constitution. I think that there is a pressure that comes when you have students that get up in front of the school board and say things that, you know, certain people, very vocal people in the community may agree with, but are just simply unconstitutional and wrong. And so I think they feel pressured. But the reality is that high school is not a place where the school should be able to, or the government should be able to pick and choose who gets to speak and pick and choose who gets official club recognition based on some sort of secular litmus test. And that's just simply not constitutional. But in terms of going forward, we certainly hope that won't be the case, that that schools like Bozeman and school districts around the country will realize that anytime they do this, there is federal law on the books and there's 30-year-old case law that says, hey, this question has been decided. It's not a violation of the Establishment Clause, but it is a violation of these students' First Amendment rights to speak and to gather as a Christian club.
So your demand letter sets the date of December 18th for a decision. Have you heard anything yet?
We have not yet. We have not yet. Tomorrow is the 18th, so we hope to hear from the school, and we hope to be able to come to a productive resolution of this.
Jonathan Larcom, Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel, lots of good attorneys over there, has been my guest on this segment of Washington Watch. Coming up next, you won't believe the new Netflix movie airing around Christmas time. It is a Brazilian YouTube comedy troupe's attempt at secularizing and pillaring Jesus, the first temptation of Christ. Coming up next with David Clausen, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. Next.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
It will be Christmas, so in the spirit of generosity and giving, help Family Research Council advance biblical worldviews of faith, family, and freedom in the marketplace as we stand here in Washington and across the country on your behalf with us in 2020. Call 1-800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or visit our podcast site, TonyPerkins.com, to make a direct donation as we match dollar for dollar going into the next year. Well, you've all heard of Netflix, very popular streaming service that has faced controversy for particular elements, questionable to say the least, but they could have potentially do what we call in entertainment, jumping the shark. This may be the penultimate of any attempt they've ever made to create controversial art. There is strong pushback following the release of a new film that contains profane anti-Christian content. Now, the film produced by a Brazilian YouTube comedy troupe, and they're known for producing sort of irreverent, controversial material in the past, is called The First Temptation of Christ. Not only does the film feature explicit and sexually suggestive language, it depicts God and Mary as lovers and Jesus as a homosexual. Joining me now with his analysis is David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. David Clawson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be back, Sarah.
Okay, so we have a lot to talk about with this because when I read this first news piece, I thought, surely I have to be misreading this. Was your reaction as completely gobsmacked as mine?
It was. And so I actually spent the first part of my morning actually going on to Netflix and watching this 46-minute film. And it is way worse than I even imagined. Mm. I will spare our listeners some of the more sordid details. But essentially this film, it's like you said, it's produced by this satire troupe down there in Brazil. But it starts with Jesus coming back to Nazareth for his 30th birthday party. And he's with him. He brings a companion who he apparently met in the desert who's his gay companion. And it essentially, the film just kind of has the back and forth of this gay companion introducing himself to Jesus's family. Turns out, and I don't think any of our listeners are going to watch it, so I'm going to give the spoilers. It turns out this gay companion's actually Satan. And just multiple scenes that is just sexually explicit. God shows up in the film, and we find out that he's a lover of Mary, much to Joseph's chagrin when he finds this out. And so the whole thing is just absolutely profane and blasphemous.
Now, we talked a little bit about this at the break. I'm glad that you sort of subjected yourself to this material, because so often I think we hear critiques from the left about censorship that go to the issue that we don't actually know what we're talking about because we've never actually seen the material. So you having subjected yourself actually puts me in a position not to have to watch it, because I trust your judgment and I trust what I've read. We know this is not the first time that Christ has been the subject of a controversial art piece. 1988, people will remember, was The Last Temptation of Christ, starring Willem Dafoe. That was a huge controversy at the time. 1987 was a photograph of a crucifix submerged in a vat of urine. People have taken swipes at our Savior for quite some time. This, perhaps for me, from what I have heard from you and read, could be the worst and most profane attempt to address the notion of Christ in all of the artwork we have from the modern century.
Right, I agree with you. And what's really unfortunate is that Netflix has, you know, Netflix didn't necessarily produce this, but they are using their platform, which reaches millions and millions of people around the world, including in Brazil, where this came from, but as well as in the United States, giving this troupe down in Brazil a platform that they can, you know, export these immoral anti-Christian values around the world. And they've already received a ton of pushback back in Brazil. Just when we when you started the show, that 2 million people have now signed a petition in Brazil asking Netflix to take it off because they're just completely offended by this profane, anti-Christian, blasphemous portrayal of Christianity. What's really galling is that the producers of this are calling this the Christmas special, a Christmas special. And so I just imagine a family that gets on Netflix and sees a Christmas special, like, oh, they're going to assume that there's Christian content on there, when they're going to find the exact opposite that's actually on there.
Yeah, that kind of marketing is intentional. It is not accidental. You release a movie like this in December. You release it on December 3rd. You market it as a Christmas show. They know precisely what they're doing. And Netflix knows what it's doing by allowing a platform of their size to host material like this. And again, not the first time Netflix has been embroiled in controversy. Some of its children's shows have been wholly inappropriate for kids. And there's actually drug use in this as well, from what I understand.
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually one of the more benign elements of this film. Yeah, Jesus gets high in one scene. Mary, Jesus' mother, does marijuana at one point. One of the wise men hires a female escort. And so it's just little detail after detail. Again, those are just the benign elements. Then you get to the part, again, where God and Mary are apparently about to embrace and Joseph walks in on it. So there's just storyline after storyline that is kind of in your face. And, you know, as a Christian, I'm thinking about this. And part of this, you know, this isn't the worst persecution that Christians could face. You know, Jesus in John 15 said that if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. But it is interesting that now you see that, you know, we can't make fun of people based on their gender, based on their ethnicity, based on their national origin, really based on their religion, unless you're Christian.
That's exactly it.
And that's the only category that it seems that the mainstream media is okay with still making fun of and belittling your belief if you're a Christian. And I'm glad that people in Brazil are so outraged by this, and they're pushing back and telling Netflix that there is not an audience for this in our country, and we don't want this type of content on our platforms. So good for them.
Yes, I would agree with you. And I have to tell you that that patent double standard was evident to me as well. So I read some of the Twitter comments, and there are a number of individuals who have said, if this was a comedy about Islam, if we used Muhammad as the protagonist in the movie, things would be extremely different. So why, in your estimation, why is Christianity the one population segment that it is okay to pillory, to persecute, to attack? Is this because we know this is part of our story as believers?
I think that's part of it. And also, I think, you know, Christians usually don't push back. You're right. If this was a character of Muhammad, I thought of in 2015, the Charlie Hebdo.
Yes.
You know, they featured a character of Muhammad that actually wasn't near as graphic
right.
at all what we've seen of the way Jesus was depicted in this. And there was a massive uprising, protest in Middle East countries. It actually led to an attack on the offices where this magazine was produced.
Right.
They were complete outrage. Whereas when people take swipes at Christianity and of Christian convictions, no one really says a whole lot. And so, again, I'm just grateful that these Brazilians, you know, they're not doing anything inappropriate, but they're signing this petition telling Netflix, we don't want this type of content in our country. Because, and again, Brazil has the largest Catholic population in the entire world.
Right.
So it's quite galling that this film troupe would do something like this. So they did another thing where it was called The Last Hangover, where they made fun of Jesus' disciples getting drunk at the Last Supper. So again, they do this a lot apparently. They did this for their holiday film last year too. But I'm glad that what you see Christian leaders and Christian politicians in Brazil trying to send a clear signal that this is not wanted in our country. And we can learn something from them.
Do you think this is strictly a numbers game? You see such a tremendous outpouring of outrage. And there are 2 million Catholics who are saying, we've had enough of this. It won't stand. And yet earlier in the show, we were just talking about the fact that Hallmark caved to what I call the rainbow mob. And after a very brief withdrawal from an ad that is showing two lesbians kissing and a conversation I don't want to have about sexual morality and identity politics with my 10-year-old, they flipped course immediately because the pressure seems to be so great. How do we account for these distinctions in worldview? Do we just need more people to speak out? Is it that simple?
I think we do need more people to speak out. And this, to me, is a reminder. You mentioned the Hallmark story. I listened to that segment earlier. You and I have talked about this on Washington Watch before. It's one of the reasons I've launched our Biblical Worldview series here
yes.
at the Family Research Council, is that only 7% of Americans have what we would call a biblical worldview. That means they view the world through the lens of Scripture. And if only 7% understands reality and understands culture that way, you're going to have the vast majority of our friends and our neighbors not understanding that. And they're fundamentally going to not understand our convictions and our values. And they're going to continue to cram this stuff down our throats. But what's interesting is that there are millions and millions of Christians. I think there is a silent majority.
Yes.
And that they do need to get activated. They do need to get engaged. Next year, we're going to have an election. That's an opportunity for Christians to get engaged in the realm of politics. But when it comes to issues of culture and entertainment, Christians need to let their voices be heard. So these media entertainment giants are not going to continue to put out this content that is just antithetical to our values.
And I do think your comments are very wise from the standpoint that Christians need to be in all the world, but not of the world. So we ought to be involved in politics. We ought to be involved in arts and entertainment. We ought to be involved in public policy. It encourages me to talk to you about how important it is for us to be everywhere that the culture is, because without our voices, there is no counter narrative. So one of the reasons I like watching what would have been originally the Hallmark Channel is because it's family-friendly entertainment, but why we like to encourage the development of movies that are Christian, that are wholesome, that promote a family perspective and family values, because if we let them take the culture from us, before we know it, the culture will be entirely devoid of our voices, won't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I like what you said, and it reminds me of what Augustine, the great father of the early church, said in the 4th century, that as Christians, we are citizens of the world, but we're also citizens of the kingdom of God as
yes.
well. And so we should be in the world, but we should never be of the world. You're
yes.
absolutely right.
Preach the gospel and when necessary, use words, right? Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes. So I hate to ask, but I'm going to ask so that our friends who are listening don't have to watch it. Tell us about the finale.
The finale, this was just sordid, but it turns out that Jesus' gay lover in this film was actually Lucifer. And while Jesus is determining what he's going to do about this, Lucifer grabs Mary and forcibly kisses her. And then Jesus somehow attacks Satan and blows him up. And then he, I guess, decides to go. He tells God, all right, I'll carry on the plan that you've called me to. So again, it's a complete inversion of the biblical story that we find in Luke chapter 1 and in the Gospels of Jesus faithfully carrying out his call and entrusting the gospel message to his disciples. And so, yeah, this film doesn't really even deserve to be called a film. It was just, I think, a poor attempt to belittle Christian values. And I'm glad that people in Brazil and even people in this country are taking note and saying that we're not going to stand for this kind of anti-Christian, profane, sacrilegious material.
Yes, and I think we need to call it precisely what it is, which is sacrilegious and profane. Again, like any other religion in the world, be it Islam, Judaism, Christianity, taking those core tenets, those fundamental beliefs, the whole notion of what we worship and what we believe and turning it into a joke would be such a different story if it was a religion other than Christianity. So do you think that this numbers game will pay off in the end? How likely do you think Netflix is to remove this content from the platform?
Well, at the end of the day, Netflix, it is all about the bottom line for them. And so I think they will take notice if this petition in Brazil just continues to skyrocket. Again, it's only been up for 2 weeks, and they have 2 million people who have signed on demanding Netflix takes this down. So I think that if Netflix hears from enough Christians and enough people of faith who are offended by this, they might act. And I hope they do.
I hope they do as well. So you referenced your Biblical Worldview series and what we've promoted through FRC. How can our listeners get a hold of that if they want to read it?
Yeah, great. So our Worldview series can be found at frc.org/worldview. And in that series, we have one on how Christians should think about life, how Christians should think about the issue of religious liberty. Mm-hmm. And then the other edition is on voting and elections, which is a very timely piece, I think, since we're about to enter 2020. But it's how should Christians engage the political process?
Yes. Oh, so incredibly needed. And I'll posit we should do another one, or you should do another one, arts and entertainment. How do we as Christians engage with that aspect of the culture? Do we just let the left have it because they have claimed it for so long, or do we continue to produce family-friendly entertainment because the culture needs that counter-narrative?
You're right, and I will add that to the 2020 lineup, Sarah.
You'll add it to the list.
Absolutely.
I want to quote from Romans 1:26 and 27. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Lest anyone watch this and think it is anything other than anti-biblical, you have right there the verbiage from the book of Romans, making no bones about the fact that this was indeed sin. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest has been David Clausen, our Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. We look forward to having you back here tomorrow on Wednesday's Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.